Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for March 15th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. In agricultural news, officials in Iowa say there will be discussions to increase the number of soybean sentinel plots in 2007. Also, USDA has submitted a plan to fix Farm Service Agency's outdated computer system. I'll have details of these and other stories. And Todd Gleason will be by to talk about how you can get a dairy certificate without ever setting foot at the University of Illinois. And we'll also have the latest on agricultural weather with meteorologist Peter Levitt. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. May wheat, 479 and three quarters down 7. July, 481 and a quarter down 10. At the Chicago Board of Trade, May wheat, 455 and a half down 7 and three quarters. July, 469 and a half down 6 and a half. September, 479 and three quarters down 6 and a quarter. May corn, 397 and three quarters down 7. July, 409 down 6 and a quarter. September, $4 and a half down 6 and a quarter. December, 397 and a half down 4 and a quarter. May soybeans, 750 and a half down 3. July, 766 and three quarters down 2. August, 771 and a half down 2 and three quarters. November, 790 down 2 and a quarter. May soybean meal, 217.40 down 90. May soybean oil, 30.55 up 10. March feeders on the Merck settling 105.87 and a half down 5. April live cattle 99.05 down 92 and a half. April lean hogs 65.87 and a half down 35. Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services is away, so joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dale Dirkholtz of AgriVisor. Good afternoon, Dale.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it appears that the liquidation hokey-pokey continues with a lot of fund movement and trying to make some profits.
Well, I don't know if they're trying to make some profits. They're probably trying to take some profits at this point. And, yeah, you know, what we're seeing in here didn't appear to be really a high-volume type thing here this afternoon when we finally fell off towards the close. But it did appear that we had some late fund selling come into the mix here. Market never did anything during the day-to-day to push it up over minor technical points, which would have been the overnight high. If we had done that, we probably would have not found so much fund selling at the end if we had had any at all. But when it failed to do that, it probably set off another round of fund liquidation. And, you know, otherwise people are a little bit hesitant to do anything in this market today. Because we did get export sales that were deemed a little bit negative, not big time, but the talk is that tomorrow Informa, the old Sparks Group, is going to release their acreage estimates. So you probably didn't have a lot of people wanting to do too much ahead of that.
The Informa numbers from the last couple of times have been in the 7 million acre range. Well, it looks like the trade is expecting Informa to come out with something exceedingly larger than that this time around.
I don't know that they're necessarily expecting them to come out with something quite a bit bigger than that. I think the general thought out there is that, you know, it could be somewhat bigger than that 7.5 million acre number that they used last time. But I think it's just this vast unknown that we're dealing with this year in acreage. And to be very blunt, everybody has an opinion this year about how many acres of corn we're going to plant. And because we really don't have any historical precedent other than one year, 1976, there's a lot of reason to at least think that, you know, no one really knows for sure what this number is going to be, and I don't think they do.
I think that the tendency, though, will be for producers, if the weather cooperates, to continue to plant corn.
That's you said the magic word, though, there, and that's if the weather cooperates, and that's something we don't know at this juncture either. You know, the 6 to 10, 8 to 14-day forecast so far this week have been saying we're going to be a little on the wet side. I know the new 30-day outlook today talked about that wetness for the month of April going to be the upper Mississippi River, so let's say central Iowa north up into Minnesota and on over into the Dakotas. We're going to be warm, too, but I also know at this time of year when we're at the equinox, as it is at this juncture, weather is kind of hard to predict anything other than something fairly immediate. In other words, the next couple of weeks, because we get into this game where when we go through the equinox, just like we do the solstices, that sometimes your upper air patterns change a little bit, so it's hard to really see weather ahead very well.
So after the Informa numbers, are we then completely a weather market, essentially, the acreage report aside?
No, we're not completely a weather market until we get the acreage number out of the way. Because no matter what Informa says, you still got the USDA number, and like it or not, simply by the vast advantage in terms of numbers of people surveyed, the size of the USDA survey just dwarfs all these other private surveys. So the USDA survey, although it isn't accurate in itself necessarily, it's still a much better indication of what's going on than all these other small private surveys are.
Put another way, then, if it's a weather market, is it a more sensitive weather market than it has been in previous years, with much more violent, volatile swings possible traded on weather reports?
Well, I think just by the nature of the price levels, we're going to have a lot more volatility. I mean, that's just a given. You know, and having people gotten excited, you know, we've had roughly about a 50-cent break in the corn market. I mean, hey, folks, wake up. We're at $4. We're not at $2 or $2.50 anymore. Your moves are a lot bigger than they used to be, and so your volatility, even though it's not something you're used to, is a lot larger than it used to be too, and it's just something you have to build into your mix.
And that implies that producers have to be even more attentive than they may have been in past years.
Well, maybe you need to be a little bit more attentive. The other thing I think it's really more important here is that, you know, you just have to be a little bit more forgiving to things, you know, and you have to maybe be a little bit more disciplined about things and thinking, you know, if I really think I need to be making a sale at this level, for example, you know, don't try to fine-tune where you want to sell it. Just go sell it.
Because I can imagine some producers are probably now beating themselves up that this market has dropped 50 cents and they didn't do something.
Yeah, but you know what? If they haven't done anything since last fall, they need to remember they're still about a dollar and a half ahead of the game. And a lot of people tend to lose sight of that. They look at, you know, they missed out on the last 50 cents, but they need to look back and go, you know, I'm a buck and a half, $2 ahead of where I was last fall. Why am I kicking myself for selling a little weakness here if I need to be selling something?
All right. Turn your attention to the soybean market. What are you seeing there?
Interestingly enough, when you look at the corn, just to backtrack, I mean, some people are a little excited. We've broken some trend lines here. I'd like to mention that, you know, we did that back at the very beginning of January when we had that sharp move down, only to see that market turned up real sharply after that. And, you know, some people are a little excited about the trend line having failed here at this point. In the soybeans, though, when you look at the mix at this juncture, you can see that, yes, trend lines are still intact at this point. So you don't see anything necessarily really negative. But when you look at beans, you know, two things come to mind at this point. Number one, we're right now harvesting a 3.7, 3.8 billion bushel crop in South America. You know, that's a lot of competition coming on stream. The second thing I think it's important that people need to keep in focus here, and this is one that's going to be tied to weather. If, in fact, we would get into a weather pattern that would delay planting a little bit, I could see a picture where corn prices go up and soybean prices go down, basically to keep farmers from even thinking about switching anything back the other way. Because I've heard a lot of farmers talk about, you know, well, $7.50, $8 beans, that's not anything to sneeze at. And it really isn't. Corn may still be more profitable in one sense, but, you know, if you're looking at later planting and yield repercussions and stuff, people think, well, maybe I'll just go plant some beans instead of planting everything to corn. But I think the bean market's going to move such, if we would get into that pattern, that it will tend to discourage them from moving acres back to soybeans.
Thank you very much, Dale.
All right.
Dale Dirkholtz of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Taking a look at Ed Kuser's two-state forecast tonight, he says it will be mostly cloudy, with lows ranging from around 20 in far northern Illinois to 35 in the south. Then tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs ranging from 38 degrees in northern Indiana to 54 degrees in far southern Illinois. Extended outlook across the two-state region, cooler than an average weather expected through the weekend. Showers arriving in Illinois on Sunday and Indiana on Sunday night. Milder weather expected next week. Showers and thunderstorms should become more frequent next week as wet weather systems are expected to parade through the Midwest every few days. And locally heavy rainfall is possible later in the week. In agricultural news, the discovery of soybean rust in Iowa is raising questions of whether USDA's Sentinel program is effective in discovering the disease. In 2006, there were between 20 and 30 Sentinel plots scattered across Iowa. An Iowa State University plant pathologist says there will be discussions to increase the number of Sentinel plots, perhaps as many as one in every county in Iowa. David Wright is a researcher with the North Central Soybean Research Program. Wright says 2007 could be a turning point for soybean rust.
In the other continents in which this pathogen has invaded, it's taken 3 to 4 years for it to really build up to the point where it's caused big problems. So this is the year when we are watching it very, very closely, and we'll see what happens. The good news is the late freezes that we had this winter went pretty far south into Florida, about halfway down, and it did a nice job of eradicating the areas that had overwintering.
Soybean rust was also discovered after the 2006 harvest in Illinois and Indiana. Deputy USDA Secretary Chuck Connors says the agency has submitted a plan to the Office of Management and Budget to fix growing computer problems of the Farm Service Agency.
The bad news is obviously the fact that the resources that are going to take for us to solve this problem for a system that in some cases dates back to the mid-1980s, for crying out loud, is going to be enormous. I mean, when you've let things go for that long, for that tremendous amount of period of time, getting it up to modern standards, you know, is not going to be an easy task.
Connor had no estimate of how much it will cost to fix the USDA computer system. Senators Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas and Norm Coleman of Minnesota have introduced legislation to extend the federal excise tax credit and income tax credit for biodiesel to 2017. If adopted, Lincoln says the legislation would continue the era of growth in the biodiesel industry. Lincoln sponsored similar legislation, which became law in 2004. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says next month the agency will implement the 2007 highly pathogenic avian influenza early detection system, an updated version of last year's wild bird surveillance plan.
Once again, our state and academic partners will conduct surveillance in all four major flyways and in Hawaii and in the South Pacific. We also will use the data collected from 2006 to further focus our sampling on high-risk species in geographic locations.
Johannes says there's more to learn. He says that's why the president is calling for additional research funding.
To better support their work, in 2008, the president's budget includes an increase of $16 million to design a new consolidated poultry research facility in Athens, Georgia. This facility will be a premier center for conducting critical research on exotic and emerging avian diseases that could have devastating effects on animal and human health.
In addition to wild bird monitoring, domestic poultry research and monitoring, and bird flu research, USDA says it is supporting international efforts to combat avian influenza, including providing training and equipment to Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam. The USA Rice Federation says shipments of U.S. rice from a number of U.S. exporters are being held at the Mexican border. USA Rice spokesperson Bob Cummings.
We received reports starting this morning that milled rice, U.S. milled rice shipments that were going by rail were being denied entry into Mexico because they failed to have a certificate stating that they were GMO-free. That requirement or condition for entry was something new to the industry that no one had expected. We also learned later this afternoon that, unconfirmed, but perhaps that paddy rice has been caught up in this restriction. We've been talking with USDA in Washington and corresponding on email with the FAS office in Mexico City to first get a better idea of what's going on. We need the facts of what's happening so that we can figure out how to move forward. We obviously don't believe that any trade can occur if there's a strict enforcement of a GMO-free requirement, so we'd like to work with the Mexican government and our government to find a solution that's going to allow trade to continue. But at this point, we're really in the information gathering mode just to see what's going on.
Mexico is the largest single export destination for U.S. rice. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
The University of Illinois is reaching out to students interested in dairy science. As Todd Gleason reports, the U of I is using the web to offer coursework around the globe.
You can go to school at the University of Illinois and never leave your home, be that in Chicago or Africa. Dairy specialist Mike Hutchins has pioneered online coursework for the U of I's College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences.
We have developed a dairy certificate program, and this is one of the first online classes here in the United States, which means students that can get to the internet can take our class from any place in the world. And in fact, we've had people from all over the world taking these classes. These classes are all recorded on a CD-ROM, so the student goes to class whenever she or he has time. So each week they are given about an hour and a half of actual condensed lecture material that they will listen to. Then they have a homework assignment they complete, and then one day a week we go live on the internet where we maintain a classroom environment. I will call that synchronous learning. And they can then respond and ask questions. We present new material and finish up that area of the work.
The online classwork is referred to as asynchronous. That means the teachers and the students are all working online at the same time, and there is interaction among the group. The University of Illinois Dairy Science Certificate Program consists of six different classes.
This certificate is actually awarded by the University of Illinois. It is certified by the graduate school. And there are several programs in engineering and library sciences, to mention a few, that have these same certificate programs that a student can earn. It is not a master's program or a PhD program, but a certificate of completion, which can then be used in their career development or pay enhancement or perhaps looking for new jobs.
The online classwork from the University of Illinois does not come cheap, but that's par for the course when attending a world-class institution.
The other aspect that this is part of the university, so you will actually get a grade in the class in a transcript. Therefore, the cost is modestly high. It's about $300 per credit hour because it is part of the university. The good news for those students who do not want the actual degree or classwork towards a master's, they could take it as an audit, which reduces the price about in half. So there is some flexibility, but it's not a very inexpensive program to deliver, and these programs will run for about 10 or 11 weeks.
The classes generally follow the normal University of Illinois semester system. To learn more about the U of I Illinois Dairy Certificate, just type Dairy Certificate and UIUC, which stands for University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, into the Google search engine. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What do you make of the liquidation that's been going on the board of trade? It looks like we're losing about 7 cents a day on average in the corn pit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as we made that key reversal there a while back, that we were kind of looking at 390 level on the nearby month, and that's probably still in the picture. Closed the night at 398 on the 397 three quarters on the May. So kind of a strange situation in the cash market here. We are going lower on prices. We are seeing the farmer movement almost completely dry up here, but yet we're seeing the bases really pretty weak, and you know, some of the interior values, especially like the processor values down into the southwest feeders, pretty poor, and the river market seems to be really about the best market if you have those three alternatives. So it's kind of a question of, you know, have we cut back some of the usage maybe, or have we just got enough supplies on hand that the elevators are moving the grain because they have to? Question is probably a combination of both.
So you're not seeing very much hedge to arrive at this point?
Well, not real. I mean, there's some to arrive stuff, but I think that was already, you know, in the market, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that it's really slowed down in the last week or two.
So is there much grain to be had in the field? And I guess I'm looking particularly at soybeans at this point.
Soybean-wise, I was referring more to the corn there.
Yes.
Soybeans, yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of beans to be sold out there yet from a soybean standpoint. And we've got plenty of beans on hand. We got South America taking away the export business. You know, it's pretty obvious to see why the soybean basis is weak, but I was thinking more on the corn there on my earlier remark.
Right. So what should a producer do? I mean, 50 cents off the board, they're probably saying, they're kicking themselves, I missed the move, they're saying.
Well, I don't miss the first move anyhow. I don't know that you want to panic and do something here. I guess our approach has been, if you like the price and you want to sell something because you like the price, that's fine. Go ahead and make the sale. If you're doing it because you're scared and want to panic, I don't think that's the right reason to do it. You know, you got to look out and see what you're, and we've talked about this for quite a while, you don't want to let yourself get backed into a corner to where you have to make a sale. If you've done that, then, you know, you try to pick out the bounces and make the sales, I guess.
Your prices today, sir?
371 on the cash corn, 367 new crop, 702 on the old beans, 755 on the new.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thanks, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, and in about 2 minutes, I'll join agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt for a look at the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Dozens of searchers in boats and on foot are scouring a creek below the Clinton Lake Spillway this afternoon for any sign of three boaters missing since last night. Kim Knight of the State Department of Natural Resources says they're looking for two adults and a child from the Bloomington area. The Illinois Senate has passed a resolution taking a stand against sending more U.S. troops to Iraq. The non-binding resolution passed on a voice vote without any opposition or even questions. No Republican senator spoke in favor of President Bush's Iraq policy. The resolution commends American troops, but also says the war has been expensive and that sectarian violence is increasing. Republican Senator Dan Rutherford says the resolution was so general, even supporters of the president's policy had no reason to oppose it. Other Republicans said the measure passed before they realized what it said. Meanwhile, a noontime rally against the war drew a few dozen people to the University of Illinois Quad today. The city of Champaign may officially be a bigger place in the next few weeks. The Census Bureau has finished a special census of rapidly growing subdivisions, and preliminary totals show nearly 7,700 more people than the 2000 census found. City officials say if the results are certified, it would mean about $1 million more each year in state and federal funding. They say the money would help pay for services that have been stretched thin by Champaign's expansion. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says he's willing to back off two private highway proposals if the public doesn't want them. Daniels has suggested that private ventures should build and operate the two tollway bypasses, including the Illiana Expressway, which would span 50 miles of northwest Indiana and connect with I-57 in Illinois. Daniels says he believes the tollways are good ideas, but he concedes the time might not be right for them. Chicago Transit Authority officials say a report from the state's top auditor backs up what they've been saying all along: more money is needed for mass transit. The financial condition of the Chicago area's mass transit systems is so poor that not even doubling fares would bail them out. That's the conclusion from State Auditor General William Holland. He doesn't advocate doubling fares, but it helps to illustrate the financial straits the agencies are in. Holland suggests lawmakers review the funding formula that relies on sales tax and look at ways to better organize the agencies and the regional transportation authority that oversees them. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Peter Levitt, a meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, let's begin with the National Weather Service. I do believe they issued long-range forecasts today.
Yes, third Thursday of the month is long-range forecast day, and they're continuing pretty much with what they said last month. This is for the period April, May, and June. Let's start with April. In April, at least they have some above-normal precipitation forecasts for the upper Midwest, centered on Minnesota and including eastern portions of the Dakotas and northwestern Iowa. And they have below normal in the far southwest and in Florida. The rest of the country is at equal chances, and we've discussed what that means. It means it's really no forecast at all. But when you get to May and June, the 90-day forecast for April, May, and June shows temperatures well above normal across all of the western two-thirds of the country, pretty much near normal in the eastern Corn Belt and eastward from there. But above normal there and hot in the southwest and in the northern plains as well, they have some strong above normal readings. And then for precipitation, they go with below normal in the southwest and the and southern Texas, and the rest of the country is that equal chances word again, which means they're not putting out any bias on the forecast at all. Take your pick, above normal or below. Well, the implication is that if it's above normal in April and they have equal chances for the three-month period, which includes April, that's April, May, and June, that May and June are probably going to be dry, in other words, to get that above normal amounts in April taken care of in May and June. For whatever that's worth, it looks like we're looking at a very warm spring and a dry spring, which is favorable for getting the crop into the ground, and there's been pretty much sufficient moisture in most areas, so we ought to get the crop off to a good start. The question is the warm and dry pattern going to be too much of a good thing? And, of course, we don't know that right now. We are looking at a La Nina pattern perhaps developing, which does suggest that we get some moisture into western areas in the early part of the season and drying out, though, in eastern areas. We've got months to worry about that. So right now, that's the long-range outlook.
Wow, and that's all the time we actually have. Thanks,
okay.
Peter. Thank you much. Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt, and that is today's closing market report. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. Central Time for Commodity Week. And remember, you can also subscribe by podcast to this broadcast. It's as easy as going to our website, WILLAG.org, and clicking on the link on the right navigation page that says podcast, and then following the simple instructions. Have a great afternoon. This is Dave Dickey.